Life Audio.
Putting God back in his rightful place, you're recontextualizing him in your life, making him present. And not that he isn't present, but it's, I guess that's kind of the point, is that we have such a way of forgetting his presence, of like ignoring it. And so that is one of the things that I've tried to practice.
Last episode, we heard from Australian worship leader and songwriter Darlene Check on the biggest challenges facing the church today and some fun Christmas talk. Today, we're going to go to the other side of the globe as we chat with Benjamin William Hastings from Ireland about his holiday traditions, as well as a few more serious things. Welcome to Conversations on the Walk. Here we go. The first question we asked was Christmas or Thanksgiving? Which is your favorite?
Christmas, because in Ireland, we don't have Thanksgiving.
Any funny Christmas traditions?
Funniest? We would, it's maybe not funny, but we would always do presents like on Christmas Eve, but not all the presents. So we would have like, even when we were older, like Santa presents, like on Christmas Day, we would give mum and dad their presents on a Christmas Eve for some reason, and like other family things, and yeah, it was just the weird quirky thing we did.
Then we went for it and asked about his nativity set.
Like in the house? I don't think we had one. Is that
okay?
Is that sacrilegious?
Yes. You are hereby banned from this interview.
Favorite Christmas dish?
Oh, stuffing. Cranberry sauce.
Did you do turkey?
Yeah, we did turkey. But I like turkey. I feel like you have to have turkey for it to be Christmas. But I don't feel like turkey's anyone's favorite. Am I wrong by that? Like, I feel like I could take it or leave it, but it needs to be there. One of the girls we live with is a Canadian. We did Canadian Thanksgiving last week, and I grilled turkey legs for the first time. And they were pretty nice. Yeah, it was a whole thing.
Were you a part of any Christmas pageants?
Yeah, when I was younger, I would have done the nativity, probably shepherd 4, or like, you know.
You were a shepherd.
Yeah. Or sheep 3.
And the last of the Christmas questions was, what's your favorite Christmas carol?
Probably O Holy Night. Or is it Night Divine? What's it actually called? O Holy Night. I mean, the melody in the chorus of that is just so exquisite. And the chord movement.
A lot of people are saying O Holy Night. Something about that song. Okay, we'll be right back with more from Benjamin William Hastings. But first, we had a conversation with Aaron Stewart, the co-founder of Planning Center, our partner on this episode. We asked him, what is the most helpful tool Planning Center offers to musicians?
So, if you're putting all of your music in Planning Center to organize it and to give to your people to rehearse, what you can do is download the Music Stand app, which is best on a tablet, so an iPad or an Android tablet, and that lets you log in to your account, and then it says, here's this week's service, and it launches in a customized view, and it makes it so that whatever music you have, whether sheet music or chord charts, whatever it is, as PDF files, it gets put in there so that you can just swipe from song to song, or you can use a wireless Bluetooth foot pedal. If you want to be hands-free, you can just tap your foot and it changes the pages. Actually, you can even link multiple devices so that when I turn my pages, it just automatically turns anybody else's pages who wants to be turned. And then also, you're able to take notes on it. And so what I love about this is I take notes the first time we're going to do that song, and then when we do that song 2 weeks later, a month later, a year later, it just comes up again with all of my notes. Well, so if I can save notes, why can't I share my notes? So if you are playing piano next week, you can be like, well, I don't want to take my own notes. Did Aaron take notes on this? You can just say, there's Aaron's notes, import them to mine. So you can share your notes with other people. If you have your audio files on there, it allows you to listen to those. This is how I practice my stuff every week. So I sit down at my keyboard and I like open Music Stand. I launch the audio player and it's like, I can scrub through the player at the bottom while I'm taking notes on the music right there. I'm like, what was that? And I like back up. I'm going to highlight that part because that's where I'm going to sing a harmony part. And so having all that, sharing those notes with your people and turning those pages, it just makes rehearsing or playing in the service so much easier.
For those interested in transitioning to Planning Center, you can find out more at planningcenter.com.
What impacts you every day? There is one book that influences almost every aspect of our lives. Museum of the Bible reveals the Bible's impact on your favorite musicians and artists, the way we measure time, social justice, our national monuments, and more. The Bible's impact is all around you. Discover how at museumofthebible.org/impact.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Okay, then we got a bit more serious with Benjamin and started with some of his history. We asked who mentored you and brought you up to be the songwriter and worship leader you are today.
I mean, probably in a lot of ways, my dad. I have to thank for a lot of what I'm doing. He's a songwriter. He's always written songs for the Salvation Army. He's written lyrics. And so I grew up very much around songwriting, and it was always a big part of what we did. He was also like conducted the choir and like played in brass bands. He played tuba and I played cornet, which is like a smaller trumpet, you don't know. And I was terrible. Like I would pretend. I remember just sitting second row, just miming, pretending to play the notes. And everyone would have known, but I thought I was getting away with it as a 10-year-old. But yeah, I think my dad. And then in later years, I joined a church. There was a great guy. I actually had quite a few really, really helpful people along the way that kind of pulled me along and brought me along. Just local church guys, and really grateful for them.
We then asked, how do you live a worship-focused life off the stage?
It's the repositioning of God in our lives, or the true positioning is maybe a better way of saying it. And so I think for me, I can do that. I think the Lord's Prayer is actually a really beautiful sort of way to align that. There's a N.T. Wright book where he lays it out. I think it's literally called the Lord's Prayer. And one of the things I find really beautiful about that is he goes through every line and the importance of every line and why it's in that order and how it's effective. And so a while ago I got in this practice, and I don't do it every day. I should, sometimes I forget, but I get this practice of almost rewriting the Lord's Prayer, and I write it like a kind of like a, maybe not like a poem, but like a devotional. And I'll basically just say the same thing but in different words. So like, dear great cosmic father of the universe, like who owns the star, something like that, and then that'll be our Father in heaven, and I'll move on. And I find that really helpful as far as like a daily practice of, I guess, worship, because you're putting God back in his rightful place, you're recontextualizing him in your life, making him present. And not that he isn't present, but it's, I guess that's kind of the point, is that we have such a way of forgetting his presence, of like ignoring it. And so that is one of the things that I've tried to practice, and I find it actually really, really helpful, and really, I guess, and there's a certain liturgy to it, because you're actually practicing the way that Jesus prayed in a new way, I guess.
What influence did growing up in Ireland have on your songwriting?
Definitely. I think I have this embedded, growing up in Ireland, it's very poetry sort of heavy. I grew up doing speech and drama, which is like this I've rethought of this a few weeks ago, and I was like, it's so wild that I did this. The funniest thing, we would stand up, we'd memorize poems or like a monologue or something, and you would competitively recite the poem in this room of like, it's probably, I don't know, like probably 100 parents there to watch their kids or whatever, and each kid would get up and recite the same poem, and whoever like recited it best won the competition. And it's such a funny thing that we did, but I did that for years, and I'm super grateful for it in hindsight, because I was getting exposed to all this amazing poetry that I think then embedded its way into my writing. And even structurally in my writing, there's things that I really can't escape from now, like rhyme patterns or syllable count in lines, like the intentionality of all that and the meter of how something sounds. So I do feel like that Irish poetry actually really influenced my my writing, and I've always, with that, been a massive fan of hymns. And I, again, because they do mirror in the same sort of way, like a great hymn reads like a great poem. And so I love, I've got a few hymn books, like old hymn books at home that I'll just sit and read. Especially some of the ones, they just lasted the ages. Like the truths in them are so profound, and they still, the poetry of it still cuts so deep. And I think if it's lasted 200 years, there must be something pretty special about that. So I would say hymns are probably one of the main influences, actually, on my writing.
We then asked, what is the Holy Spirit downloading to you right now that you're writing about?
Yeah, wow. That's a really good question. In one way, I would say I'm not entirely sure, because I feel like it's often in a hindsight that you see that stuff, right? It's like you'll be experiencing things in your life and you don't realize how God's moving and the pieces he's pulling it together until you look back and you're like, oh, wow, there was so much intentionality to all of those things that now I see it. So I don't know if I have a fully accurate answer for right now, right here. And I feel like in my life, I probably have been on this journey of like rediscovering God, grappling with him, wrestling, as you will, for the last couple of years, that I've probably been so consumed by that, that I haven't been able to fully have my pulse on much else. But I do think, I do think I'll look back on this time, especially at the minute, yeah, being out with Chris, doing all that stuff. I think I'm going to look back and see those things.
We asked Benjamin how he deals with the tension of writing sacred music versus just writing music.
I think it's a really good question. I wrote a song, it's on the record, called The Jesus I Know, and it kind of starts to grapple with some of those concepts and challenges. I think the thing that excited me when I was 10 years ago now, it's crazy. I was in college in Australia, and I was in this place where I didn't know what I was going to do with my life. Like I knew I wanted to write music. I wanted to write worship music. And but it just wasn't right. Like I was writing these songs and they didn't seem like they were landing, and it just wasn't connected. It felt like bad versions of songs that already existed. Like a song Chris Tomlin would have wrote when he was 12. Like that's what they felt like. And one time I was at a conference, I was serving at this conference, and I was walking this woman to her car. It was raining. And so my job was just to like hold an umbrella, talk to the ladies, walking to their car. And halfway through the walking, she stops me, looks me in the eyes and says, "Are you a writer?" I was like, yeah, actually, I am. And she started prophesying over me and was like, well, you have the ability to express deep truth. And that's that's what you need to do. And that, it shook me, because it's one of the times in my life where I knew without a shadow of a doubt that I'd heard from God. It hit me deep on the inside. And I went away, and out of that, I kind of started writing songs that, to me, as opposed to trying to write a song that was going to work in church, or trying to write a song that's going to work on radio, or trying to write a song that's whatever those intentions were, I started just writing songs directly to God. Almost like love letters feels like a bit of a flippant or new agey way to say it, but kind of like that, like just Psalms, I guess. Like this is for me directly to God. It's actually not really about whether it fits some predestined purpose. Like this isn't about it being, even working in church, like that really wasn't my driver. It was like, this is for God. And I hope it's helpful to other people. And it wasn't until I did that, stopped trying to write songs that were going to work, and just started writing songs that it was first and foremost like a message to God, I guess, or a prayer, that those songs actually did start working in church. Does that make sense? Like it wasn't until I took those labels off that I actually had something to offer and that people would actually want to sing. And I fought over the years, like especially as I've become more, you know, as I've written more songs, had other people sing my songs, do this for a while, you start to learn what works. You start to learn, like, if I write a song like this, or I've studied songwriting as well, like pretty intensely. So I kind of know which boxes to tick to make a chorus singable. But every time I try to do that, I write the worst songs. And I'm constantly fighting with myself to remember you need to start with them, as opposed to starting with the end goal, like, I want this song to be successful, or I want a gazillion people to sing this song, or I want whatever that thing is. Starting there and working backwards and being like, okay, so cool, the song should probably do this and this and this. You need to start here, which is like, what I actually want to say to God, or what's God saying to me, or what revelation do I have to offer people? And you work from that point. And if it never gets all the way here, that's fine, because that was never the point to begin with. It's like, but I feel like reversing it, it's kind of how you start to lose some of those labels. Okay, funny story about this. And this is maybe an overshare, but I'll just share it anyway. So a few years ago, I was riding with a couple of good friends, Marty and Dean, in Sydney, and we sat down to write. We literally sat down with the objective, like I said, of like, let's write a song. And it's not an unholy objective. The objective was like, let's write a song that's going to be helpful for church. But essentially, it's like, let's write a song that ticks all these boxes that everyone is going to be able to sing. And we spent the whole day doing it. And we are just struggling. Like, nothing's working. It feels so dry and like, just, it doesn't feel heartfelt. It just feels like another song. And so we go for dinner. We were probably going to finish up. We go for dinner and we get talking and we start talking about Irish hymns, actually. Like, we start talking about poetry and hymns, and like, we were having dinner in this Irish pub in Sydney. So they were reading like the poetry on the walls. And so we're like, let's just go back and write something we love, like a really Celtic sounding hymn. And so we go back in, losing the objective of let's write a song that's really singable that everyone in their church is going to love, to let's just write something that we love that's inspiring to us. And we end up writing the verse to Praise the Name. And then from that, like, Marty went away and kind of finished the chorus, and we end up having this song, which ends up still being my most sort of sung songs in churches. And the story, to your point, is like, it wasn't until he just flipped it and was like, stop trying to write something that was successful or whatever that thing is, and write something that actually means something, that in the reverse, it actually became the very thing that we set out that day to do.
What are you and God dealing with right now in your faith walk?
Yeah, I mean, I've been on this journey the last few years of, which I think a lot of people have, of, like I said, like wrestling with God on a few things. It was probably pre-pandemic, 3 or 4 years ago. I, in the middle of, we were about to tour South America, finishing up. We were between tours. We were finishing the People tour, and we were about to start a tour in South America. And I kind of had this moment where the worldview that I'd built, like the faith that I'd put together, I realized some of the building blocks weren't working anymore. Like, I'd probably built on a few of the wrong things, maybe some bad theology, maybe some, like, you know, you just grab things from church and the church you grew up in, and you put this thing together, you try to build the house the best you can. And I realized the house was kind of crumbling. But so I went on this journey of trying to figure out, okay, well, and probably not even, it's probably the third time it's happened, where in over the course of my life, where I was like, okay, I need to get back to the basics of who do I actually understand God to be? What do I know for certain? But that's a really hard thing to try and wrestle with while you're also trying to lead people in worship. Because you're like, I've got questions of God, but I'm also trying to lead people to a positive place, or maybe a place that I'm not even in that very moment. But I don't want to abandon what I feel like is my calling, but I don't want to be insincere. And so I went on this imposter syndrome kind of horrible journey. And it's what pretty much the whole record's about, is me exploring this. And it's a array of things, from songs kind of talking about it really quite descriptively, and worship songs where I'm actively trying to refocus myself and point myself forwards towards like a greater truth. And so when you say what's God talking about, and even when you said what do you feel like the Holy Spirit is doing across the things, that's what I'm referring to. It's like I've had so much going on inside me that I've just been trying to get through that, and I feel like I have, like, not that I've arrived, but I feel like I've been able to kind of at least weather the worst of the valley or the mountain, whichever's harder. And so, yeah, that's kind of been where I've been at, and what I've been wrestling with. And I think in the midst of it all, realizing that that God is good, that He is in control, and that, like, life can be hard sometimes. And I think with the record, I really tried to, like, overshare almost my journey in the whole thing, in the sense that I felt like if I was feeling this, maybe there's other people in churches that are feeling similarly, but don't want to just give up. One of the things I noticed was in churches, especially during COVID, of like a lot of churches had a big drop off in attendance, and you have these groups of people that I think with the space and with the time spent away, a lot of people in that started to grow like cynical and cold, And I think because they're probably having a similar experience to me, they're all of a sudden wrestling with their worldview and their understanding of God, and they're trying to figure out, have I built my life on all the right things? Have I got God figured out like I thought I did? I think in that I saw a lot of people turn cynical, and I really didn't want to do that. But I wasn't feeling great inside either. So I was fighting the whole time for the light, like fighting to see the light at the end of the tunnel and find some hope in the midst of this situation. And I knew that God was real, but it was just trying to dig into that and really figure out what that meant once again. And so across the album, that's kind of what I do. I share the journey, hoping that those people that are feeling like that, feeling like me, don't feel like they have to give up on church, don't feel like they have to give up on God, don't feel like they need to go cynical and and dark, really, but can be truthful about where they're at, be honest about the issues they're having and the problems they're having and the doubts they're having and maybe issues they're having with their church or whatever it is, but still look towards something positive, still look towards the light. And all my favorite art, I mean, David is the best at it in the Bible. It's like you're pointing, it acknowledges the heaviness of the situation, but points towards something greater always. And I guess that's what I was trying to do. And so if God's teaching me anything, it's to persevere in that and fight for truth, fight for the light.
And our last question was, what are you seeing in your millennial generation that encourages you?
I think you've got people that genuinely want honesty and truth and transparency. I mean, I think it's been a big part of the last couple of years just across the board. You've seen all these big companies kind of get torn down because of a lack of that, and other organizations, etc. So I think that could probably only be a good thing. Is, no more doing stuff in the shadows. I think pulling things out into the light, and let's be honest, let's be open. Let's not, it was a Casting Crowns song, the Masquerade. What's the line in it? I haven't heard that song in ages, but I'm going to go listen to it after this. It's so good. Anyway, let's not pretend that we have it all together. Let's not pretend things are great. It's the pursuit of, honesty and real truth, deep truth, which I think is really encouraging. And I think in that, there's a dark side to that too. There's a shadow to that, because I think people can, I think especially in that my generation, and maybe more so the one just slightly below, there's a real willingness to just tear down for the sake of tearing down, which I think is the maybe shadow to the same pursuit. It's because that's not helpful either. So it's we need the tension of that. But I do think at its heart, the driving force is honesty and transparency. And I think that's a good thing. I think Jesus would like that.
Thank you to Benjamin William Hastings for spending time with us and sharing your heart. If you haven't done so already, it would mean a lot to us if you would subscribe to our podcast and leave us a review. Also, check out the latest and greatest on worshipleader.com. We've got all kinds of holiday content on there that's really going to be helpful during this crazy season. All right, until next time, I want to thank the team at Life Audio for their partnership. If you go to lifeaudio.com, you'll find a collection of faith-centered podcasts about health and wellness, parenting, current cultural events, Bible teachings, and more. So check them out at lifeaudio.com. I'm Joshua Swanson. Thanks for listening.
Life Audio.
Hi, I'm Zach.
And I'm Randy.
And we're from Salty Saints Podcast. We're a theology and apologetics podcast.
We hope to better equip you to be salt and light for your community. We hope that we can help you to go out and be a reflection of Jesus Christ to those around you, to your friends and your family, and especially to those that do not know Christ.
To find out more, subscribe at lifeaudio.com.